Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
My father was a guy who didn't have much time for gardening.
He worked one of those, you've heard,
I've talked ad nauseum about him, so I won't, but bottom line, he didn't have much time. And yet somehow, I inherited his love of gardening. I mean, I've done a bunch of the, I've done this show now almost 25 years, and I look forward to every show, but you know, but even when I have like famous people, and Robert Reich, for example, is going to be back in a couple of weeks for a full hour in-depth interview, which I'm really excited about, but even that is somehow on a visceral, emotional level less exciting to me than the show I'm about to do right now. We're going to talk gardening. Gardening careers, yes, but I won't be able to resist a little bit of practical stuff about gardening because I'm a gardening nut. And I'm not the only one. Many people here in the Bay Area, especially, it seems, love plants, love the outdoors. My board operator, Joanne Marr, and I talk about tomatoes and tomato towers and the ultimator, this fantastic new staking thing. Many people, though, are not just talking about it. They would love to work among plants, for example, in a nursery. But what is it really like to work in a nursery? Can you make a living at it? And whether you're interested in a plant career or not, maybe you are interested in what's new and interesting in Bay Area gardening. And with me to address all that is a manager at Sloat Garden Center. It's got 9 stores throughout the Bay Area, Dustin Strobel. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty.
Well, this show does focus on work issues, but as I said, I can't resist starting with fun, a few fun questions, if I might. So, if you were living, say, in the central Bay Area, like Oakland, and you could only own 5 plants, what would they be?
First one would be the Tibuchina. It's called the Princess Flower.
Yep.
It's a cool season bloomer, so being by the water, this thing, it seems to be in bloom the majority of the year.
Let me paint a picture. It has got the richest royal purple flowers that cover it. You know, like the plant, they come in different variations, but some are as little as 4 feet tall, some could be 10 feet, 8 feet tall.
That's right.
The beauty, they also, in addition to those amazing flowers, they have a velvety, it really is like velvety leaves that are just gorgeous. It is a true, and if you look in the Sunset Garden book, what they say about Tibuchina is that it is one of the Bay Area, the rare horticulture, or one of the great horticultural treasures. So on that one, I agree with you. I suspect we're going to fight about some of this stuff, but I won't fight about Tibuchina. What else you got for me?
The other one that I really like is a perennial called Alonzoa.
What the hell is that? I've never heard of it.
Alonzoa is a small perennial that's about 2 feet tall. And it's another one that really likes the cool seasons. And so this thing blooms for a very, very long time. Imagine a perennial that's about 2x2, either comes in red or orange, and this thing is just in bloom all the time.
Alonzo, what's the flower look like?
It's a small dioecia-like flower or an amnesia-like flower. It's about the size of a dime, but it comes in multiple clusters.
Okay. Well, I will Google it when I get home, look at the Google images, and maybe take your suggestion. Okay, what's number three?
Number three, there's a company that's in the Bay Area called Annie's Annuals.
Love them.
She grows the most unusual stuff.
Yep.
And my favorite of hers is the Annie's Annuals Poppies.
Yep. My favorite of the Annie's Annuals Poppies is Drama Queen. It is unbelievable. Do you know
Drama
you know that?
Queen is good. Naughty 90s is
right.
Good. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Now, you want to describe, paint a picture, you want me to describe what Drama Queen looks like?
Drama Queen is a poppy that gets about 4 feet tall.
Yep.
You have a flower that's about 5 inches across in diameter. It's got frilled edges on it.
Really frilled. They're gorgeous.
Really frilled.
In a bizarre color of purple and red.
Yes. And then Naughty 90s, which is also my favorite.
I love it.
More of a frill. It's the same thing, but maybe just red.
Right, red, right.
Yeah.
So now, you had an interesting story in your own nursery about those poppies. Would you care to tell us about that?
I love these poppies, and I plant a lot of these poppies every year. And last year, I planted close to 100 poppies. And I had a guy stop that worked for the county of... for the agriculture department, stop and talk to me because these are coincidentally opiate poppies.
Mm-hmm.
You can make opium out of these poppies.
Huh.
And I'm not sure if he was on the clock or if he was actually just interested in these plants, but they were really beautiful. But, you know, he made a point to tell me that they know that they're opiate poppies.
Well, there you go. You've got a side. You know, we talk about it may be difficult to make a living in the nursery business. So if you do, you always have a sideline ready to go.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You got one more plant for me? Or two more?
I really like roses for out here.
Right. What's your favorite rose? You got one rose?
I like Black Magic. Nice fragrance, red, high disease resistance, which is really important if you're growing roses out in foggy or coastal areas.
Dude.
You have a lot of problem with mildew.
I emailed you. You mentioned stuff like Double Delight, and I told you that Black Magic was my favorite. Now you've stolen my favorite?
I did.
It is fabulous. Black Magic.
I still like Double Delight, though. I mean, the flower, yeah. The color range of that flower, the fragrance of it, it's still one of my favorites.
Okay, Double Delight is great because it is a lovely big fragrance. It's a bicolor, but the form isn't that great, and it's in a big gang. Angly plant, not crazy about it. Net. But Black Magic has the finest flower you will ever see on a rose. It is pure, velvety, deep, deep, deep red, kind of like the way a theater curtain is, and the form is perfect, and it will last 2 weeks in a vase. Black Magic is awesome. Absolutely. Okay, one more.
It is. I really like Meyer lemons.
Oh, me too.
You know, nice evergreen bush.
Oh, yeah.
You get a flower that's very fragrant. You get a very productive lemon. You get these lemons that are very, very sweet.
Totally agree. Here's the problem. Most people, I've been gardening my whole life, but I just learned something, I swear, just a month ago. That, you know, I normally fertilize my plants by throwing, you know, a handful around a typical 5 gallon size, you know, a 2 foot diameter plant. I'll throw a handful of fertilizer there and figure I'm good. Not true with citrus. They want let's say a 4 foot tall and 4 foot wide tree, they want like a pound and a half, 3 times a year of fertilizer on the drip line. Am I right?
You are right, Marty. And the other thing about citrus is that they're acidic plants. So we really want to use acidic fertilizers because if you just use regular fertilizer, they're not going to be able to uptake as much of the food as you're putting down.
And so that's why you should use either citrus fertilizer or if you're going to supplement with a liquid like Miracid, which instead of Miracle-Gro, Miracid is an acid fertilizer.
Miracid is a very popular one, okay? But if you look at the numbers on the actual box, it's very high in nitrogen. It's 30-10-10. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it promotes a lot of green growth, but it actually hinders flowering and fruiting production. So there's a better one out there. It's called Maxi Acid.
Okay.
And this one is higher in phosphorus, which really helps you develop the fruit and the flower. And it also has iron and zinc in it. And the minerals are very important to the citrus. That's why the leaves oftentimes will yellow.
I actually have to disagree. I read something a number of years ago that said that for whatever reason, citrus do not need a lot of the phosphorus and potassium. That in fact, you could use ammonium nitrate, a pure nitrogen fertilizer, and be fine in most soils, especially the clayey soils of the Bay Area. You sure I'm wrong?
We actually did a test, Marty, a couple of years ago at the shop, where we had two potted citruses. And we used the Miracid on one, and we used the Maxi Acid on the other. And we got a better plant out of the Maxi Acid.
Dude, I'm going to get it. You just trumped me. Because those were national studies, where here we're talking Bay Area specific, so that's great. Okay, one more set of like fun gardening questions, and then I'll get to what I'm supposed to talk about, which is career stuff. So what would you say are the most overrated plants?
I'd say annuals in general.
Why?
Because, you know, people come to the shop, they see a table full of annuals, they're in full bloom, and that's their first gut reaction, to take that plant and plant it at home. You know, and I think that most folks miss out on a lot of perennials that are great, shrubs that are great, you know, because our first inclination is grab that color and put it in.
Got to disagree, and here's what depends on the annual, of course. I think, for example, primroses are garbage. You know, they bloom for 2 weeks. They don't bloom that well. They get eaten by squirrels. They're garbage. They rain damage destroys them. The flower is ridiculous. I hate them. But what I love is, for example, Zinnia Magellan.
Zinnias are great, especially in hot areas out here.
You can buy a six-pack for $2 or $3 or $4 of Zinnia Magellan coral, for example. And it is that little thing, but it will bloom for 6 months in a row nonstop. It's fabulous.
Zinnias are awesome, yes. They will bloom for a very long time. That's probably one of my favorite annuals.
So do not dismiss annuals. And also, and in the shade, certainly impatiens. We have been fortunate we do not get downy mildew here, but impatiens are fabulous.
We actually did get downy mildew last year.
Really?
And so as a company, Slow Garden Center is not carrying impatiens this year because of the downy mildew issue. We had a lot of folks out last year who planted big beds, who always plant big beds of impatiens, and the downy mildew came.
Really?
And wiped them out. And so now the downy mildew, you can't spot it. As a grower, you can't spot it. So you don't know if you're buying infected plants or not. And so instead of running the risk of selling these to folks, having them plant it, and then having them disappointed 2 months down the line, what we're doing is we're offering alternatives that are not susceptible to downy mildew.
All right. Well,
but it's in the West Coast now.
That's very sad to hear. Of course, I just bought some extreme lavender, which is a fantastic impatiens, and it is already blooming its little heart out and is fabulous, with not the slightest. And I know about downy mildew because I bred roses. No problem at all. But, of course, the good alternatives are like New Guinea impatiens. Tell us your favorite New Guinea impatiens.
New Guinea impatiens are great. I don't have a particular favorite, but I love that large velvety flower. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
And then waxleaf begonias, too. They're great as an alternative.
Aren't they ugly? I hate them.
No, I think they're beautiful, Marty. There's also coleus that's out there.
I love coleus.
Arenas that are out there.
Yeah, good coleus is great.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of alternatives.
I know we need to cut to the chase and get to career stuff, but I need to tell you my three most overrated, in my judgment, most overrated plants. You tell me if you buy. Lilac. Yeah, they're fragrant, but they bloom for like 4 weeks, and then there's this big, gawky, you know, shrub for the rest of the year. I hate lilac. How about you?
I agree with that, Marty, but, you know, plants sometimes, there's certain attachments to people, you know, that they make with plants, and lilacs are very special to some folks. If you choose to plant a lilac in the Bay Area, you should choose the lavender ones or the blue ones because they require less chill hours. Right? The best lilacs are the ones that are buried in snow, and we don't get that.
Right, good point. Okay.
The Lavender Lady and Blue Skies are probably the two most productive ones for out here.
But if you're going to want, you know, I know you can have some emotional attachment to them, that's fine, but that's true. We also, with certain husbands and wives that we know we should have divorced decades ago, we have attachment. Doesn't mean we should go and buy another one. Anyway, okay, another one that I think is overrated is iris. You know, I kind of like the lanceolate leaves, but the reality is they also bloom for like 2 weeks, and then they're out of there. You know, why not get a rose bush, which is going to bloom for 9 months out of the year, beautiful flowers for forever. And a rosebush costs, you know, $10 to $20.
I agree with that. There's also some really nice irises that have beautiful variegated leaves. You can also do
good
that
point.
So you have longer interest.
Yes, good point.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, and this one I'm not sure about, but, you know, we haven't talked about vegetables. I'm wondering, and this is just wondering, whether kale is the most overrated veg. I mean, it is so hot. Everything is kale. I walk through Trader Joe's and everything except ice cream has got kale in it.
Yep.
I looked at why is kale so popular? It's very nutritious, but it's not that much more nutritious than broccoli. So therefore, I would say that kale is overrated. What would you say?
I think kale is great. I have to disagree with you on that. My parents have kale plants that grow year-round.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about them. Most of the time, if you talk about greens like spinach and arugula and other lettuces, they're cool season bloomers. But the kale will actually go through the summer and produce leaves for you. We have some kale in our demo beds in the nursery, and they've been growing for like a year and a half now.
Okay. How about, I love the flowering kale. It's something called Glamour, Glamour Girl or something, which is good. It's just beautiful red, and this, of course, is the Nagoya series. What do you think of the flowering kales?
I love the flowering kale as ornamental.
Right.
You could actually eat them, too.
Really?
But I love them for winter because it can rain on them all day long, and it's not as if the petals, you know, get rotted or get damaged from the rain.
Good point. All right, I'll be good. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. I'm talking gardening, but I'm now going to turn to what I need to talk about, which is gardening careers, garden, plant, nursery kind of careers. I'm talking with Dustin Strobel. He is a manager at Sloat Garden Center with 9 stores throughout the Bay Area. So, okay, let's talk about nursery careers. To break in, is it true you pretty much have to start at the bottom? You can't start as a manager no matter how many degrees you have?
I think there's a possibility, but yeah, most folks start at entry level.
And what do you do when you're entry level? Does that mean you load soil? Is that pretty much it? Or what do you do if you're an entry level person?
At our nursery, Marty, we do everything. So even as a manager, sometimes I will load soil, sometimes I will water plants, sometimes I will unload trucks, but that's the majority of what you're doing, is you're tending the plants and helping customers.
The thing that has always amazed me is that, you know, you've got these people, and they're working pretty much at minimum wage or a buck or two above, is that about right?
That's about right.
Yeah. So, you know, you're getting these people who are $10 an hour people, and there is so much to know about plants. I mean, let's just, in our little conversation here, there's so much that can make the difference between a dead plant and a live plant and what plant's going to grow where. And yet I rarely see those $10 an hour people. They can't know it all. I rarely see them pull out their cell phone and Google it or go open the Western Garden Book or whatever. Why? Why not? Why don't they do that?
They do it at my shop.
Okay. Yeah. I've never seen anybody do it.
There's so much to learn. You know, when people start working for me out here, what I try to do is they're here because there's something about working in a nursery that interests them. And so whether they're into veggie gardens or cactus or whatever, you know, I try to start there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can just get lost in all the information that's out there, you know?
Sure.
So... And there's a whole, we have so much reference material, and there are knowledgeable nursery people here that they can ask, too.
Okay. Tell me something that I don't know about being an entry-level nursery person, something that would surprise me.
You would be surprised at how hectic this job can be.
Tell me more.
You know, the best employees that come to the nursery are usually from people or industries that are like food service jobs. You know, waiters understand that there's, you know, you have to serve multiple people, you have to get it done at a certain speed, and you have to make everybody happy at the same time.
It's very interesting.
The ability to multitask and keep a smile on your face is a big skill.
I believe it. I would also, this is, you know, seems pretty elementary, but, you know, you keep hearing about shrinkage, you know, employee theft, and most theft from retail occurs not from the customers, but by the employees. When you're paying people $10 an hour, how do you either pre-screen or prevent or deal with the notion of the employee theft? Because, I mean, you could take some Japanese maple that's, you know, a 5 gallon could be a $100 plant. How do you deal with employee theft?
I think there's a level of trust that needs to happen. You know, there's definitely procedures that we do. I mean, everybody closes together. It does happen, and you can't prevent it. And customers do it as well.
I know.
You know, I've seen people put stuff in their pockets or put stuff in their purses or load their cars without paying for material. I think that happens in any business.
Absolutely. Oh, I certainly wasn't implying that you were. If anything, I would get. You know, I would have thought, frankly, that the whole nursery and plant industry was actually operated on a higher plane. But I have a dear friend. His name is Harvey Davidson. Frankly, I don't even have a dear friend. We were dear friends for a long time, but I haven't spoken to him in a while. He was the guy who created the thornless rose.
Mm-hmm.
And he, once he had, you know, he created the first rose, and then he sent it down to Wasco down in Southern California for them to grow a bunch of it. So he, and once a year or every so often, he would drive down to Wasco to see his plants and see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he drives down there, and the owner of the farm says to him, "I'm really, Harvey, I've got some really bad news for you. All of your roses were lost in a fire. I'm so sorry." And, of course, Harvey was devastated, and he was driving away to go to get something to eat, and he drives about a half a mile away, and he sees a whole field of his roses completely fine. The guy simply lied because he wanted to steal his roses. So here we have, you know, even in this supposed wonderfully lofty industry, the nursery industry, I guess some people are always going to be not honest.
It does happen. I went and toured Monrovia, which is one of the larger growers.
Yeah.
In the country, and
right.
The new plants that they have, that they're working on, the new patented plants that they're working on, are actually secured off, and you can't enter that area because people fear that, you know, somebody's going to come along, take a cutting or take
right.
a plant, and then patent it and put their own name on it.
Yeah, you could take somebody could work. I used to, as I told you, I used to breed roses, and it takes a decade from start to breeding to evaluation to building up stock until it's commercial. And somebody can simply take a cutting, put it in a misting room, and you can in a couple of years you can have thousands of plants, and you steal that work that took me a ton of time to create. It's crazy. But let's move to something more positive than that. So let's talk about moving up to management. Only one in about 10 or 20 nursery workers ever get to be a manager, where they can actually make a middle-class living, not $10 an hour. What does it actually take to be a manager? Is a college degree help or what? What does it take to be a manager?
You know, interestingly enough, the owner of Slope Garden Centers, Dave Stress, I don't believe has a horticultural degree.
Mm. Does he have a degree at all? I thought he didn't have a degree at all.
I'm not sure what his degree is on, but I don't believe that he has a degree in horticulture.
I think I spoke to him in doing preparation for the show, and he said he didn't have a college degree at all.
But this man is very passionate about this job, this industry. I mean, he's been doing this for 56 years now.
56? You know, he's that old?
Selling plants and pots out of his garage.
He's been doing it for 56 years?
56 years.
He didn't sound that old on the phone. Okay, yeah. So what does it take to be a manager?
I think it's the passion. You know, if I wanted to just make money, there's probably easier ways to do that, Marty. But, you know, there's something about being able to come to work, be outside all day, be around plants, which I'm very interested in, talk to people and customers about plants all day. I mean, that's one of the perks about it.
But it's passionate. I mean, I'm a pianist, and there are a hell of a lot of people who are passionate about music, but most people don't have the talent. You know, is passion, what, in addition to passion, you've got to have something substantive, some skills, abilities, whatever. What do you need to be a manager?
I think you need to be very aware of how the customer experience is at the shop level. That's what I think is very important.
Tell me more.
Well, I mean, anybody can go to Home Depot or Lowe's or Walgreens and buy plants these days. You know, but part of the reason why folks come into our shop is because they want to see friendly people that know about their plants. They want to see new material. They want to be told exciting and new things. You know, and they just want to have a good time.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
So you're in the entertainment business in some sense.
Kind of. And you'd be surprised how much therapy, actually, that people come. I mean, there's people that come to the shop as part of their daily walks.
Give me, I do, you know, I stop at Orchard Nursery in Lafayette. I jog around the Lafayette Reservoir every day. And afterwards or before, I always make a point of stopping at least once a week. So, yes, indeed. But tell me, you know, give me one example. Is there one customer or one anecdote you've got about somebody who has used Slote Garden Center as therapy?
I have a lady. Her name is Danielle.
Yeah.
And last year, right around Thanksgiving, she came in and she was asking if there were positions available. And I said no. She kept coming in. And then one day, she's like, well, I have a couple of hours to kill. You know, do you want me to go ahead and just kind of, would you mind if I deadheaded some flowers? And I said, yeah.
Interesting.
And now, you know, she drops her kids off. And then she basically has a few hours to kill every week.
Interesting.
And she comes to the shop.
You know, now that you mention it, you know, when I walk my dog around the block, I make a point of weeding my neighbor's yard. It's therapy. It feels virtuous. It's a little exercise.
Right.
Yes, and it feels good. You know, and a variation on that, there are, like, I don't talk to my plants, but I do talk to my doggie, and I find him an excellent listener. Do you ever hear of anybody who talks to plants?
There's a lot of people that talk to plants. And the other interesting thing is, Marty, the people that are into plants are usually into animals as well.
Dustin, tell me the truth. Do you talk to plants?
I talk to plants.
Good. Tell me, if I were a plant, what would you say to me?
I would say, grow, damn it.
Is there one particular plant you like to talk with?
I talk to every single one of these plants, Marty.
Now, do any of them ever talk back to you is a thing that would scare me?
Not with language, but yeah, they grow and they flower and they fruit.
Yep, and you can really see if they're happy or sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their turgidity, their shininess, how much new growth there is in the axil where the growth, you know, the growth area. Yes, indeed, but I digress. Okay, you know, you had briefly mentioned the Antichrist, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's and the rest of it. I got to be honest with you. You tell me that your people want to create a great customer experience or whatever, but it's hard for me to understand how an independent nursery, which prices are much higher, can compete against Home Depot, Lowe's, CVS, Walmart, Target, all of which have bigger selections, half the price, longer store hours by a lot, and there is almost always at least one person there, at least maybe not in the winter, but during the growing season, at least one person there who is, you know, a maven, who knows stuff. How in the world can you really, expect to compete, or do you really think that the sloths of the world are going to die? Because I read that, actually, that the industry reports say independent nurseries are dying. How can is sloth going to compete? Would you better honestly not?
I think sloth is here to stay, Marty. I mean, the thing is, it's Home Depot and Lowe's. They've been around for a long time, and if they were going to take us out of the business, I mean, we would have been gone by now. But, you know, imagine your own experience. When you go to Home Depot, are you really there to stroll around, or are you just grabbing the stuff and leaving as fast as you possibly can?
I stroll because I have a bigger selection. I love walking the plants. I absolutely, because I'd rather look through twice as many plants as half as many plants. Of course I would.
I just think that, you know, Home Depot is not going to have the people that we do. Even if you have one person that knows about the plants, you know, you have to take that person and say, well, Home Depot and Lowe's, it's about volume. So they have to service more people. You know, we're smaller. You can come here. We know your name most of the time. We know the plants that you've purchased in the past.
It's like my bank. Do I want my bank teller to know my name? Why do I care? Yes, if I've got this enormous, inordinate relationship for some reason, if I'm really needy, maybe I want my $10 an hour nursery person to know my name. But why do I really give a crap? I like to go in the bank, go to the ATM, and get out without having to see a person. I like going into, I don't want to be bothered by a salesperson. I'd rather just wander. Why is that really, really a legitimate advantage that's going to enable an independent nursery to survive?
I think so. I mean, it's true. I don't want my bank teller to know me personally, or if I go get an oil change, I don't expect them to know my name. But if I'm going to talk about my pastime, this is what I do on my leisure time. Mm-hmm. This is, I want to talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about. And it makes a difference that they know me, they know the kind of plants that I like. I think that makes a big difference.
I want to make the case for certain independent nurseries, and I don't live near a slow, so it's relevant. But why do I also, I do go to Home Depot, but I also do go to what is probably the most expensive, according to this price surveys, the most expensive nursery in the Bay Area, which is Orchard. Why? Because, Ace Garden in Oakland has a wonderful selection because they're really careful to find really good plants that just aren't available in volume. So Annie's annuals, as you point out, those great poppies, or camellias from Nuccio's down, which is the premier grower of camellias.
Right.
So I think you can't say that an independent nursery is better than a chain. It's like asking whether a restaurant is better than eating at home. It depends who's doing the cooking. In this case, it depends who's doing the buying.
And it might be dependent on your mood that day too.
Yeah. Maybe I am in the mood for company from that person. Let's talk a little bit just before I let you go. The field is changing. It's not just dying. It's, you know, the independent. While many are dying, there are actual areas of growth and changes. What changes are you seeing in the nursery industry?
There's a big lean towards organics.
Right.
Growing your own food, that's a very big topic. There's definitely a big lean towards drought-tolerant plants. Those are probably the two biggest changes that I've seen.
Makes sense. They call it edible landscaping when you're talking about,
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So, and tomatoes are obvious because those clearly taste better and are really, you know, these days, it used to be the tomatoes like 39 cents a pound or 49 cents. And if I go, frankly, to the Latino groceries, they're still selling tomatoes at under a buck a pound, well under a buck. But if I go into Safeway or Trader Joe's, I'm paying $2 a pound for tomatoes that are not as good as what I can grow with a plain old Early Girl. I can buy a six-pack of Early Girls for $3 and get six great plants. Or I can go and buy some seeds of some lovely variety, Cherokee Purple or Beefmaster or whatever, and for a few bucks, I've got hundreds of dollars of tomatoes, enough to give to all my neighbors. In addition to tomatoes, what's another edible thing that is really rewarding to grow?
Blueberries. I love the blueberry. There's a specific blueberry that I really like. It's called Bountiful Blue.
Really? Bountiful Blue. Okay.
And the amount of blueberries that you get off of this plant will just amaze you.
But you can't grow that in the Central Bay Area. You don't get enough winter chill, am I right?
You know, the Bountiful Blue requires very few chill hours.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I will buy that, too. Well, you've given me three things. I'm going to look at Alanzoa. I'm going to look at Bountiful Blue Blueberry and Maxi Acidic Fertilizer. My engineer and board operator has also a really great question, something she's noticed as a trend, urban gardening. Tell us about urban gardening. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of rooftop gardens that are going up. There's a lot of vertical gardens that are going up. You know, people want to see a lot more green around them.
It really makes sense. I like that. So what's a piece of non-obvious advice about doing either, whether it be a rooftop, you know, if you're living in an apartment building and, you know, you're on the 18th floor of some building, I guess we don't have that many in the Bay Area, they don't allow that height. But let's say, you know, whatever, you're on the fifth floor and you're on the roof and it's a flat roof, fortunately, or whatever, and you decide you want to do something there. You've got a landlord. Do you have any advice about how to create an urban garden on a roof of your apartment building?
You know, the best advice that I give you, Marty, is probably go down. If you're in San Francisco, go down to Striving Arboretum. And you will get great examples of what you could do. You can even Google it, and you could see a lot of examples on how to do it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
There's a big variety that you could do.
Well, you were very cool. You know what? I think we got a call. Yeah, I should have taken calls. Let me do that. I'm going to give out the phone number. Do we have a call in line? Let me see. Because I'm a bad boy. I should, you know, I've had such fun talking with you that I haven't gone to the listeners. But do we have a caller on the line? No. Okay. But I will give out the phone number. What the heck? If you have a question, I'm going to let him go in just a minute. So if you have a question about careers, especially careers in nursery, gardening, plants, whatever, it could be anywhere. It could be at the wholesale level, retail level, whatever. Or even a plain old question about gardening. I'll take one or two calls if you'll call right now, because I want to get on to doing 3-minute workovers on you, my dear listeners. So the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for Dustin Strobel, who is manager at Sloat Garden Center. I've been giving him a hard time, but I really love those guys. I really do think that, you know, in a life that is ever more stressful, where there is ever more, it's harder to live and breathe, nurseries are a place you can breathe. And I do commend places like Sloat to you. So anyway, now I think, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we're waiting to see if anybody feels like calling, I'll give you a softball question.
Okay.
What's one thing we haven't talked about, either about a career among plants or just gardening or whatever you feel like? You like to feel like, oh, good, I got a chance to say that on the radio. What do you want to say about careers or gardening or whatever related to plants?
I'm going to say the biggest thing that I noticed, Marty, the difference between good plants and great plants, or good gardens and great gardens, is food. Mm-hmm. That's the number one thing that people forget to do.
Yeah, agree.
You know, they're living things. We don't see their mouths moving, so we don't think about feeding them. But yet we expect them to grow, we expect them to flower, we expect them to fruit. Well, all of that takes nutrient and energy.
And it doesn't, you know, with time-release fertilizers, you can do it. You know, what do you think, actually, about time-release fertilizers like Osmocote versus your standard fertilizers that have to be done every 2 months?
I think those are okay in terms of, you know, as a supplement, but I wouldn't lean on those, you know, 100%. If you look on the box of most of those time-release fertilizers, Marty, in fine print, it says works best at 70 degrees soil temperature.
Absolutely right.
And we don't have 70 degrees soil temperature year-round.
Good point. Thank you.
I would rather use the organics. I would use the Maxi line. That's a great one.
Hmm.
And I would feed at a minimum 6 times a year.
Whoa. But it doesn't take a lot of work. How about, you know, the liquid fertilizer you can stick into your, if you've got a home irrigation system, you can, you know, there's a little canister. You can just stick it in there. What do you think about those liquid fertilizers?
Those are great. The water solubles that you mix yourself in a watering can or a bucket are great. The organic fertilizers, which you just sprinkle around the base of the plant and water in, those are great too.
Also, you know what? No sooner did I say, if anybody feels like calling, the line's all flooded. The lines are all lighted up. So what the heck? First of all, a listener didn't want to go on the air, but wants to know, other than, online nurseries, is there one or two that you particularly recommend, or is it merely based on which particular product you're trying to, what kind of plant you're trying to buy?
I think it's based on the particular product. Online nurseries are great if you're looking for unusual, hard-to-find things.
Yeah. Let me give a little answer. For seeds, swallowtail seeds are great. They're in Santa Rosa. Google swallowtail seeds. They have fantastic source of stuff. For roses, Fred Edmonds roses. Roses by Fred Edmonds are great. For citrus, Four Winds, which, of course, you can buy at Sloat in almost any nursery, but Four Winds is great. And what else is there that's a plant that I love?
Any annuals you can buy online.
Good point, but they charge a fortune for shipping.
Most of them do.
Yeah, but yeah. Annie's Annuals is located in Richmond, and you can go there anytime, and it's all right out there. It's in the industrial area of Richmond. You can go to Annie's Annuals. Worth going. They also have various parties and events at Annie's Annuals every couple of months, so, you know, just go to annie'sannuals.com. So anyway, that's great. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, Dustin Strobel from Sloat Garden Center. What's your question or comment for him? Hello, it's you.
Hello, me?
Yep.
Oh, hi. This is Tim from Oakland.
Hi, Tim.
Great program.
Thanks.
I just wanted to point out another area of urban gardening, and that is habitat restoration.
Ooh,
so there's a whole variety of groups. Well, right here in Oakland, we have the Friends of Sossel Creek that's restoring one of the main watersheds in the area, but there's also Native Here Nursery, and so there's a whole group of us who are all within the splendor of the California native flora.
Excellent.
And all kinds of interesting colors and behavior patterns of all those plants. And so I just wanted to point out, if people were interested in gardening, there's always a need for volunteers in those nurseries, and it's a great way to learn the native plants of California that need virtually no water and no fertilizer.
Excellent suggestion. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Dustin, so do you sell? You're finding an increase in the number of native plants that are getting sold?
Absolutely. I mean, even with just the drought tolerant theme, people are going to natives. The thing about natives too, Marty, is that there's so many microclimates in California by itself. So just because you have a list of natives, there's actually some specific natives that do better in specific areas of the Bay Area.
You bet. Of course, for example, I love bougainvillea, and it's the species Spectabilis, which, you know, you would think that the hybrids that have been subsequently developed would be better, but in Zone 16 where I live, Spectabilis, the species, is actually the best, although James Walker is fantastic. So, yes, microclimates are very important. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Dustin Strobel of Sloat Garden Center. What's your question or comment for him?
Hello, are you asking me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Deborah. I live in Oakland. I just had two comments for something you were speaking about a minute ago regarding your questions about how to design rooftop gardens.
Mm.
The San Francisco Urban Agriculture Alliance researched and reproduced a really good booklet that you can download from their website.
Ooh, great.
I helped do the graphic design on it, but they researched all the laws and the rules, and there's a lot of structural things to take into account.
Yes.
So it's good to know about that.
Yeah, what should you Google? What should people
just
Google?
Look up San Francisco Urban Agriculture Alliance.
Awesome. You had another point you said you were going to make.
The other point, I learned recently, there's a danger in buying plants from Lowe's and a lot of the big places. They're using neonicotinoids. I don't know how to pronounce it, but the nasty pesticides that are linked with the death of the bees. And all of us should be really concerned about that. So for me, I will never buy anything again from those stores until they stop using those pesticides.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Is there any? I mean, you talked about Dustin. You talked about growers like Monrovia. Now, Monrovia sells to everybody. It sells to Lowe's and whatever. In general, is the most of the plants that you sell, are they really any different in terms of the amount of pesticide or fungicide that is used in their growing than there would be at a Lowe's or a Home Depot?
That's actually something that came up last year, Marty, and we are talking to our growers and finding out who specifically is using the neonicotinoid sprays and trying to lean away from some of those people.
Interesting.
And then we're also, you know, bringing it up to the growers so that they know it's a concern.
Interesting. Good point.
And so, you know, we're trying to lean them against that practice.
Great. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, Dustin Strobel from Sloat Garden Nurseries. What's your question or comment for him? Hello, it's you.
Is it me?
Yep.
Hi, I'm sort of straddling both sides of this. I'm an avid gardener. I've been listening to this. I'm starting to work with some kids and some cooking and all that. Mm-hmm. Thanks to you, Marty, I'm sort of semi-retired and starting a new wave, and I've started creating these aprons that are for urban gardeners.
Uh-huh.
You know? And just trying to figure out my next step. So I'm sort of straddling the two things here, my love for gardening and my ability to design and make. And I've made and have gotten some pretty decent reception for these gardening aprons that are 99% recycled.
Right. Well, very good. Thanks very much for your call. You know, I want to talk about Dustin for a minute. I am a huge believer in the therapeutic value of plants. There's this thing called horticultural therapists, and I don't know if there's data, but sometimes, even though I have a PhD from Berkeley, which specializes in evaluation and statistics and all that stuff, sometimes I end up relying on gut feeling. And I profoundly believe that seeing things grow, plants or animals, is about as therapeutic as anything could be. Planting a garden, especially an edible garden, feels enormously therapeutic. You have any comments about that, Dustin?
I agree with you 100%, Marty, on that one. And it's not just watching them grow, too, but it's also about the connection that you're making with these plants. You know, the idea that you're nurturing something so that you can watch the process of it, you know, to flower and fruit. I've been working with my son's school garden since he was in kindergarten. This is my fourth year doing it with the kids. And the joy that they get from being able to grow and eat. You know?
Oh, my God.
From their own efforts is huge.
You know, it really pains me, and nobody works harder than I do. I really work 70 hours a week, but I especially, as I get older, I especially appreciate the importance of joy in life. And when I see the ever ratcheted up academic standards, K-12, where they're forced to learn the area of a parabola in the fifth grade and calculating inequalities and endless demands, I look at the new Common Core standards and I just feel like kids would grow more as well, pardon the pun, and enjoy more if they planted more gardens and did less stochastic processes. And by the way, next week, my show, my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, will be on. We're going to talk about some of this stuff, talking about what could school curriculum really be like. Should it be more work-related? Should it be more fun-related? Should it be more career-related? Should it be love of learning, abstract theory-related? But for me, teaching kids to do theater, teaching kids to do music, teaching kids to play sports competitively but kindly, and gardening, I think would do more to create a good America, a good world, than all of the abstract, professor-driven curriculum that in my mind, infects our schools. Any comments about that, Dustin?
You know, the interesting thing about that, Marty, is that I grew up in my grandfather's garden, in my dad's garden, you know, and now that I work with my own son and his classmates, there are some situations where I bring in the kids and we're supposed to plant a veggie garden, and I've had some kids go, I can't get my shirt dirty, or I can't get my hands dirty.
Right.
That always surprises me, because I feel like that's what I want to do when I was that age, you know?
Right.
And I think that there's more of a disconnect between children and nature, especially in the urban areas. There's a great book out there. It's called The Last Child in the Woods.
Tell
and
me
it
more.
It talks about the disconnect that this generation has with nature.
Yeah, my dad used to, you know, as hard as he worked, he would always grow maybe 10 tomato plants in his backyard. And he, of course, had many more than he could use. He not only enjoyed the process, but he would take them and harvest them, and he would go in his car to a bunch of people and just give them away. And I have made, my dad died a few years ago, and it is my mission. I have, because I share your love of citrus here in the Bay Area, I have orange trees, I have Meyer lemon trees at my house, and I just give them away and harvest them. I put them out on the street with a sign that says, take. It feels so cosmically rewarding. I swear, it's more therapeutic than, you know, I'm not an upbeat person by nature. I love being on the radio. My wife says I'm a different person on the radio than in life. I'm kind of a mildly sad person by nature. But there is no better and I've done therapy, and I've done all this meditation and all the rest of it. There's nothing that has been more salubrious for my mental health than gardening and giving away what I've grown. Right?
Absolutely.
Yep.
And it's also it fosters a sense of community, too.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in San Francisco and I lived there for 10 years in the Sunset District, I didn't know my neighbors on either side. And it wasn't until I was spending so much time in my backyard, you know, that I got to know the neighbors on both sides.
Let's let our listeners know. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I was expecting to get rid of this, my guest, but we're having too good a conversation here. Now, some of it is related to the career of working in a garden center, but some of it is not. But it's work also, you know, Work with Marty Nemco is mainly about career, but it's also about creating a life. And I think we're spending some very useful listener time here talking about creating a life. And so, now, you lived in San Francisco. Did you... Do you now work in Danville, which the stereotype is it's a bunch of cold-hearted, rich, white people, to be honest, that don't give a crap about anybody else or community except their beamers. That, of course, like every other stereotype, is an overgeneralization. But having spent a lot of time in San Francisco, but also now working in Danville at a luxury nursery, what, honestly, do you believe that gardening is at all the leavening of that stereotype among even the people of Danville, or no, honestly?
Honestly, Marty, before, when I've worked at the San Francisco Sloats, I've worked at the Marin Sloats, and when I was offered the job to come to Danville to work, you know, a lot of people in the industry, you know, sales reps, other friends, other associates, warned me about the people of Danville, and they said exactly what you just said.
Right.
But, you know, the awesome thing about it is I've met the nicest people coming through the nursery. Hmm. You know, I've met, we have a bigger group of people that actually know all the staff's names. Hmm. We have so many people bringing us home-cooked, home-baked goods.
Wow.
I mean, just very, very nice people. We had... The last holiday we were open, we're only closed three days a year. So on some holidays we are open. And we had, you know, a customer come through the other day and was surprised that we were open, you know, bought some stuff, left, came back with drinks and snacks for everybody.
Wow.
I mean, really, really nice, down-to-earth people. I don't know if it's just because they're plant people that they're down-to-earth and they're very kind.
I got to tell you, I agree with you. I wanted to lay out the stereotype because it's real. I shop at Trader Joe's all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I live right near the Trader Joe's that's on the Berkeley-Oakland border. But I hike every day with my doggie around the Lafayette Reservoir, and there is a Trader Joe's right there. So I shop roughly half the time at the Berkeley/Oakland Trader Joe's and then at the Lafayette Trader Joe's. And, of course, there's variations. But I have to say the people generally seem kinder and nicer and the Lafayette one, despite the stereotype of what we think about the people who, you know, live in Contra Costa County.
Right.
You know?
So, as long as you don't talk politics and you're just talking plants, you're doing fine.
there is some truth to that. But then again, there's also, you know, that is something that has bothered me tremendously in my whole life. Probably nothing has bothered me more. Fortunately, I have my health. But given that I do, I can worry about less important things, about the intolerance of the supposedly tolerant Bay Area. Not all wisdom resides left to center. I'm a moderate Democrat, but boy, dare I say something that isn't, you know, isn't good, hard leftist. I am absolutely censored or censured by the supposedly tolerant left of the Bay Area. And that, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, having heard wisdom from both sides of center, it's very dispiriting that the supposedly tolerant left will tolerate nothing that doesn't comport with their views. But anyway, I digress. This is too much fun, though. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with Dustin Strobel. We're talking about careers and careers in the around plants and gardening, but also just gardening-related questions and creating a life. It's your turn on the air. What's your question or comment for Dustin? Hello, it's you.
Yeah, hey, me?
Yes.
Oh, hey, Marty. Love your show. Been listening for over 20 years.
Wow.
Just came in from the garden, and you were talking about plants. I hope you put the names of the plants you were mentioning in the first part of the show on your blog or somewhere online there.
All right.
The one that I can't seem to figure out is the Alanzona.
Yeah, why don't you spell it for us, Dustin?
It's Alonsoa.
Ah, there you go. And I wanted to say, I live right down the street from where you're broadcasting there. And here in this neighborhood, we do great with begonias, which you don't like, but you ought to try the tuberous begonias.
Oh, those are great. Tuberous begonias are fabulous. It's the wax leaf begonias that are ugly.
Yeah, I know. Well, everybody wants to plant those, but, you know, I have a few of them, and they come back year after year, even though they're supposed
yep.
to be annuals.
Yep.
A lot of annuals are actually perennials in our neighborhood.
Yep, tuberous begonias are fabulous, but you've got to get the ones that are resistant to mildew, because otherwise the mildew will kill them.
Azaleas.
There's also another great begonia.
They do great.
I'm sorry, Dustin, what you were going to say another great begonia is? What?
It's called Reiger. Reiger is kind of like a smaller tuberous begonia.
I'll keep an eye out for that. And I like the Rex just for the look of the leaves.
The foliage, yeah.
Right. I mean, they're stunning. I got a lot of shade in my garden, and I can always find a place for them. My particular favorite is Oxalis.
You're kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about that yellow weed.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
That yellow weed, there are over 70 varieties of Oxalis.
Really?
And I've
beautiful
got one, it's from South America. It's it grows from a tuber, and it puts out little pink flowers, and it'll bloom for 11 and a half out of 12 months of the year.
You mentioned, I want to give you, you know, we talk about specialty nurseries, you know, online. Tuberous begonias, there was a company used to call it called Antonelli's that was, but they've been bought out by some, I think it's called Golden State or something. Go, if you want great tuberous begonias, go there, get a tuber or two. And also dahlias, you know, which also come from tubers, which grow really wonderfully here in the Bay Area. And
I can't get them in my yard. Something kills them.
Well, but maybe some of the listeners won't feel that way. Go to Swan Island. Swan Island dahlias, they're the leaders there. And the key to not, by the way, the key to the dahlias not dying is the tubers is do not water them, overwater them, because they'll rot.
Yeah. And I got one more for you. I've got an old rose in my backyard. It will produce a thorn about every 100 branches. It's called Marie Pave.
Oh, yeah, that's an 1880, that's from the 1880s.
That's exactly.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, I hate things with thorns, so I don't grow them. I don't grow, what do they call it, bougainvillea. But I got the Marie Pave going.
There are many thornless roses. As I said, my friend Harvey Davidson bred a whole line of them. So Google the term thornless roses, and you will see they're in almost all colors. And his best one was a golden yellow. I don't remember the name of it, but Google thornless yellow roses, and you'll find a really completely disease-free in our area, healthy yellow rose, just for what it's worth. I'm talking too much, Dustin. Anything you want to add?
Just keep it up, Marty.
All right. Dustin, you want to add something to what we were just saying?
Well, the Lady Banks roses around town,
right.
That's one of the thornless roses. They are in full bloom right now, and they're putting on a spectacular show.
I hate them because they only bloom for 1 month, and then they're gone. Unlike recurrent blooming roses, Lady Banks roses are going to only bloom those wonderful yellow flowers over at, like a nice climbing 10 feet, but they'll only bloom for a month or less.
That's true, Marty. But, you know, it's the kind of rose where it's like people will stop and take their picture in front of this thing because it is just loaded with flowers.
Well, another one like that then is Cecil Bruner, which is also from that early 20th century.
Cecil Bruner's got lots of thorns.
Cecil Bruner does have thorns, but I love that perfect miniature with that slight fragrance.
Right. Yep.
And that's a rose that also dries really nice.
Yeah, I just
watch
meant
out for that Cecil, though. It'll take over your yard if you don't plant it.
It's huge, and it's also it was created in in the year 1900 or a little earlier. So yes, it is thorny, but it is another one of those once blooming roses.
Though, but it's a great boutonniere flower.
Right. Okay. And now we're getting into the weeds.
Right.
Pardon the pun. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Dustin Strobel. What is the last, the finale, the grand finale question for him or me? Hello, it's you.
You talking to me?
I am.
Oh, okay. As therapy, gardening is therapy. I'm involved in art therapy for schizophrenics at the VA hospital in San Francisco. And there are quite a few gardeners. And once a gardener, always a gardener. And my grandfather started Rose Gardens in Berkeley. Ever heard of it? And it skipped a generation. My dad hated it. My brother did. I loved it. I used to start it when I was a kid. And I was in the Depression. And so I garden in the Tenderloin on my ledges. I have a bunch of windows, and they're on the outside. And I've been going to slow nursery since they started.
So I'm interested in the fact that you're in the Tenderloin. Now, again, we've kind of romanticized this whole gardening thing. Do you know people who are classic Tenderloin homeless people, maybe even those who have big drug problems, for whom gardening is therapeutic?
Oh, it would be, and has been. I started a few years ago, it's going to be a hotel for poor people. We had a roof garden, and it was a fantastic thing, but then they rehabbed the building and all that.
Anyway, I want to thank you very much for the call. We're just about, I can't believe it, Dustin. Oh, we have one. We have another person who wants to get on the line. So we always serve our listeners first and foremost. Welcome to Work with Marty Namco, Dustin Strobel. What is your question or comment?
Hi, I hope you can hear me.
I hear you beautifully.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to comment for those of us who are considering going into this profession or occupation of gardener or landscaper. It's one of the more romanticized occupations I've found as a longtime gardener. And maybe next to poet, the most romanticized, because there's a lot to know about irrigation and drought resistance and pest control. Plants are the easy part. Knowing the plants and getting to know plants, that's the wonderful fun, let's go, you know, tiptoe through the tulips part. But there's a lot of really hard knowledge that people need to have in order to be effective and not get frustrated.
Excellent point. Irrigation knowledge, pesticide, fungicide. How much can you do? What can be grown organically? What will die without the use of pesticides and fungicides is really very useful. I appreciate your tempering comment. It was an excellent last comment. It was great that you called. Thanks so much. Okay. And Dustin Strobel, I want to give you the last word again. Again, now think of one last thing you want to tell our listeners, either about your about the career of working with plants, wholesale, retail, irrigation, whatever it is, or just about creating a life that has plants as an important part of it. What do you want to tell us, Dustin?
I think two things. If you want to get into this industry, just know that it's a labor of love, and your passion is what's going to carry you through. If you're just in it for the money, there's a lot of easier ways to make that money. The other thing that I'd like to mention is feed your plants, please. They're starving.
Let me take one other, like, before I let you go. You know, most people want, the holy grail is to make a middle-class living. And I'm not convinced that the odds are good enough for doing it in retail. If I were trying to make a living with plants and make a middle class, not get rich, but make a middle class living, I probably would be a grower of some very specialty plant. I'm not talking about pot either. but something that is either some herb, so organic herb that was popular, or a difficult to grow kind of plant that nonetheless would be commercial, something organic, or I would be a consultant, let's say in irrigation. I would focus and learn everything I could, not just about installing, you know, PVC pipe, but really understanding as much as I could about really the optimal approaches to irrigation. And does that make sense to you?
It does make sense to me. You know, the nursery, you should really view it as a springboard into some other facet of this industry. You know, there's people that specialize in edible gardens. There's people that'll do consultations or designs. There's people that become maintenance gardeners or installation gardeners or work with landscape architects. There's a lot of directions where you can take this job.
I know a guy who makes a great living just putting raised beds into people's houses.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you, Dustin Strobel. You've been a great guest. I wouldn't have kept you on for more than a half hour if you weren't great. Thanks very much. He is a manager at Sloat Garden Center. He happens to be in the one in Danville. I'm sure he'll be happy to say hi to you if you want to come by and see him. But Sloat's also got 9 stores throughout the Bay Area. Dustin Strobel, again, thanks very much for giving me part of your Sunday.
Thank you, Marty. Have a great day.
You too. And that is Work with Marty Namco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr. Of course, all of you for listening and calling in. You guys were great. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. Most workplace skills are acquired outside of school, if they're acquired at all. Should schools teach them? My wife, Barbara Namco, and I are going to debate that question, as well as your calling work-life conundrums. So, until next Sunday, this is Marty Namco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
If you have any questions or comments about work with Marty Nemko, you can contact Marty by going to his website, martynemko.com. That's Marty, N-E-M-K-O.com.